Okay. Are you all wrapping up at the tables? I think I have here a long list of questions that you all have been feeding in, and thought I would just choose a few of them and start us in, and then we can, I don't know if we're going to open this up, but we'll see if we can get to the point where we can do that. So Grace, I thought I would direct this one to you. One of the questions was, how do you balance education goals for, quote, broken children with other emotional needs?
My answer, well, when I came back, I had people who were backing me up. Like, I had the teachers who understood me. I had a nun who understood what I went through, and she would, out of class, take me to office and just talk to me, not saying I am at risk or I'm disadvantaged, but just talk to me like a human being. And what I found out, like most of the organizations that go to these places of war-affected areas, they tend to take the student away and, you know, make them look like they're different. I mean, they're different in a way, but if you make them look like they're different, they're going to think that way, and they're not going to recover as well. And they're not going to trust, because it took me a long time to trust. So sister would take me to office and just talk to me about her experience, not my experience. And when I go to class, I study as just other students, and she would tell me, you have a future, and you still can do more than those who have never been abducted. And so I feel like even when we're taking the student to school, the teachers should be trained to how to handle these kids. Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like you would say that it's critical to be in an emotionally supportive environment, and that that's one of the strategies a school and teacher would have to pursue. Yes. And I guess the question is, too, how much of a focus do you think there can be on the academic side of education in this kind of context?
I strongly believe that academics part of it should be focused on, but also what helped me through is living among the people who suffer the same thing. Because if you're taken to another group where people have never experienced that, they will not understand you. So I lived in a place that really they understood me. That's why I'm saying if they're taking them to school, they should be in the same community that they had, people had same experience, and they can talk among themselves.
Great. Sampap, have you seen any efforts to unite parents, teachers, community members in a coalition to kind of encourage education for girls, like sort of the building, you know, organizing communities to create a better system for girls?
Yes. After working for many years, it took a long time. You have to be very patient with that kind of thing. And the children talk for you. You know, you cannot promote your success by talking, by telling people that the project is good or children are good. When the children doesn't show any talents or, you know, their potential. So this is kind of, you have to prove your work by provide the best quality, you know, empower them to get up strong, and then they give them homework. Sometimes they go back to the village, they campaign about rights, they campaign about the non-violence, they talk very, you know, reasonably with their parents, they can, you know, can become very friendly. This is how to get them, not get away from the problems, but be part of the problems. You know, education take people from the problems, and they run away from the problems. They will not get back to the problems and thinking of solution. That is not right thing, I think. So you educate them with that problems, but they have to recognize that this is my problems also. It's my community problems. Poverty, violence, drugs, gender, I have to go back to do something good for that. Not I have to leave this village and go to New York City, Chicago or Boston or New York or you know, Japan. So that's why this kind of thing, we have to start with children and then get them back to the parents and then involve with the community and come to values that you see that how much they have changed. And you see, you can compare two groups. Those groups you decide to send them to Malaysia, to Japan. You sell them and they became prostitutes. They came back with smoking, with drunk, with violence, with a broken heart, with health, HIV, and they cannot be any models. You can competition. You can have a competition. The children who come through the program of 10 years come back with a very gentleness, very kind, very concerned about, you know, family and things. They say, oh, this is a choice. That's proof that which direction is much better than. So I have done that for 20 years. So now that's why it proved that this work.
And it sounds like you're saying we need to organize communities and mobilize communities, but that the first step is to demonstrate success. Deborah, can the leadership strategy of Posse transfer to programs in other cultures, such as those that we're discussing today, or do you feel like these interventions are so particular to the local context that it's hard to think about replicating them?
We were just talking about that a little bit at one of the tables. You know, what are the best practices that are transferable? And one of the things we were talking about was the cohort model. You know, that you can put a group of students in a team, and that provides all kinds of supports that are just, it's not rocket science, right? You know, emotional support, academic support, someone to lean on, a shoulder to cry on. And that, in addition to the mentoring pieces and the intervention pieces and the training, all of that might be something that's transferable. You know, we are a U.S. program, and I'm so not an expert on how this might transfer elsewhere, but you are, and we'd be happy to share our ideas with any of you. We're hoping to double the size of our impact by 2020 in the United States. We want to, by that year, reach 10,000 students per year coming through our program. We want to be in 10 cities. We want to have 100 university partners. And I think this might be mentioned later, but it might not. We're launching a $50 million venture philanthropy campaign to make that happen over the next year. So we know the impact can be greater, and we know the best practices can be shared. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a good segue for Grace and Sampap to share, you know, how can, if the donors in the room could make one contribution to your program, what would it be, and just what would make the greatest impact?
Well, I think when we talk about education, I think we have to open mind that education is not just putting money, building technologies, and support and things, but we need creative idea. We need education thinkers, educators that can decide the best curriculum that can fit in different kind of children in different kind of cultures and situations. I'm talking about emergency education. It doesn't have to take 4 years. It doesn't have to take 1 or 3 years, but maybe 3 months is an emergency education. You can bring that kind of things with your experts, you know, design a small curriculum and keep those kind of education to the at-risk, the most at-risk. That we really need support from educators, organizations, and institutions. And the policy also very important, that when you have the open mind of education, that means that you have to open the policy for those countries to receive support from one country that have different political system. Like United States boycott Myanmar, you know. They boycott Myanmar, they boycott the government of Myanmar. But when we try to use the fund from United States to help children in Myanmar, they say no, you cannot use that money. That's it by the rules, by the law of, I don't know. But it's true that, oh my God, are you boycott these children? You boycott this also, including in that boycott? They say, well, this is by the law. So I think we need that kind of power to push that boycott, sanction, or any kind of policy have to get away from education opportunities. Work. It's something that we have to have freedoms to work to help children. That's difficult enough. Don't push more policy on, get stuck in this education policy. That is what my needs right now.
Well, if you to contribute in my organization right now is to send a child to school, because that's my dream, to see that these children get education. They're skilled. They're just like any other child who deserves to be educated. Put them into schools, but also if you can support to train the teachers who are going to educate them, because the teachers have to be sensitive to these kids. And my program puts them in one school, because just like she said, for emotional support, and that's how I got through what I went through. So put a child to school.
Great. Do we have time for one more question, or how should we? Okay. So it'd be interesting to hear you all's thoughts. I mean, one of the questions was, you know, essentially this problem, winning the battle for education requires so much, you know, getting the kids in school, keeping them there, training teachers well, you know, so many different things. And the question was, how do we do it all? And do we try to do it all at once? Do we start in one place? And I guess the question for you all would be, if you had to tell this room of influencers where you think they should start, you know, what one or two of the critical, most critical focus areas is, what would you say?
Well, for Uganda, I told you the war has been there for 20 years. And to get these kids, what is critical right now, I think it's still putting them to school, because I told you that there are other organizations doing counseling, and they send them back home, which is not a home, but they need a future. The first thing for me is to send them to school to get education. And teachers have to be trained just like the way I said, because most of these primary schools, the elementary schools, it is free, but there are no teachers. Teachers go to cities where they can be paid, but down there's nothing.
It's time, I think, that business education have to concern about alternative education or free education. And please believe that free education doesn't interrupt any business of education at all. You know, because those groups are poor. Even we start the business education, but it doesn't reach them, and they were not offered. They cannot pay for that. So I think even you run the business education, you choose support non-profit education and free education with your powers, with your talents, with your energies. And that means that in those poor countries, need your support from any institutions, any company, any rich, you know, institutions that support the education for free. Please share those free education to anywhere that you think they need it. Thank you.
And Deborah, what would you say?
Everyone's going like this.
Okay. Well, Jean's telling me one last word.
I know, but yeah. I'm the softie, so.
Brief.
Okay, the biggest thing I think we can do is join forces. I think we need to be more political. I think we need to be more vocal. I think we need to write to the policymakers. We need to write to the corporate leaders, and we need to speak together, because what we're doing right now is we're speaking in all these different places individually, and we can have more power if we join together.
Thank you very much. You know, first of all, I apologize that people did not have as much time at the table to talk. We added two presidential candidates in quite a lot and are still trying to stay on time. So that's an executive decision made above. And we really wanted to make sure you did have enough time to hear our panelists. Let me just mention a couple of other things that were in the table. There was discussion going on at the tables about how you need this cohort approach, bringing people together similarly situated, and yet the kind of individual, you know, as Sambhav said, learning about the individual, their circumstances. I think what really came out here, I've never seen so much common, Oz, is that I think you really broke through on the degree that you really have to focus on the psychological issues of the child beyond the books and learning. A lot of people wanted to know more about what can we do on the preventative side, you know, what do you do, are there ways to, you know, to have less child soldiers, to have less, you know, what more can be done on the preventative side. Accelerated learning, you know, how do you get the accelerated learning to help people catch up, what are the most effective strategies there. So those were some of the types of things that came up at the table. But I think it was really struck by the degree that so many people at the tables were talking about the psychological impacts of and understanding that in having an effective education strategy. So we really thank you. I'm going to let you sit here for a second as we just go through and mention a few people who we want to do. One, just a quick shout out to, is Daryl Ogden, who's president of Project Grad, and they've committed to implementing their program, which is very much in the spirit of PASSE, another program that tries to reach people early, focuses on motivation and getting them to college. And then, Deborah, I want to do a shout out to you too. You're up here, but you're making a commitment. They've currently received 1,000 applications for 410 slots in 6 cities, and they're spreading to 10,000. You know, I'm just an economic guy. We're not that good with numbers, but 10,000 for 410 slots. It's harder to do this than get into even Teach for America or Harvard, and that's hard. And they're spreading to 6 to 10 cities, and you're considering Bay Area, Detroit, Houston, Indianapolis, Miami, New Orleans, Philadelphia, and increasing the number of partnerships and colleges from 32 to 50. And now let me do a couple of more formal of our commitment announcements. And the first is to Diane Gang, who is the president and co-executive director of the Rural China Education Foundation. Hi. And let me just say a little about them, that they are partnering with Echoing Green, the Tiger Woods Foundation, who's that? No. And the Global Fund for Children, who we know well. And the Rural China Education Foundation focuses on meeting demands of kids in rural China, capacity building, working directly with principals, a theme we continue to hear during this session. Schools providing financial support for school improvements, and then documenting their activities, develop a catalog of their most effective practices, and this is valued at $2 million over 5 years. Thank you very, very much. And then the second is Ramji Rahagvan, who is chairman of Agesta International Foundation. And they are, I'll give you time as I'm reading, a leader in creativity-based education for poor children and teachers, focusing on increasing quality through hands-on interactive science. And boy, when you see that done well, it is so exciting. Maybe I would know something about science if I had been taught that way. 50 mobile science labs and 25 rural science centers, student-to-student programs, has kids learning from each other as well. Impact 5 million disadvantaged children and their 300,000 teachers, valued at $22 million over 10 years. When we talk about quality, science and math is the issue that comes up at the adolescent level everywhere. So I'm very happy to have this commitment as part of Clinton Global Initiative. And finally, Jerul Bilimora, we've been trying to have you up here for a while. We were trying to get you to speak at dinner even. She's at AlphaTune, and this afternoon, I'm sorry, I'm going to use you to do a pitch. you really got to come to our next panel, the last panel I have today. It is on women's business education. It is a dynamic panel, and I'm telling you, this is an area that has been underserved, and there are so much exciting things happen at that level above microfinance. So I'm using you for an advertisement as well. She's been ahead of the curve on this, in social and financial education, giving kids the first chance to be agent of changes in their own lives by doing that kind of financial education, even at primary school, focusing on the individual acquiring skills. Their program has been piloted for and developed for 17 years in 11 countries, and they are, we talked about scaling up quality. They're currently in 20 countries, reaching 247,000 children, and their modest scale-up strategy is just to go to 75 countries and reach 1 million children by 2010. Their CGI commitment expands into 100 countries to reach 4 million by 2015, valued at $21 million over 7 years. We wish you well. Thank you. The next plenary is supposed to start at 12:45. I don't know if it will make it exactly on time, but they're trying to keep the trains running. Thank you so much. We're really looking forward to our afternoon panel, and then tomorrow we'll have our fifth and Our next panel will be on health and education, which will be our third panel, and then our last panel this afternoon will be on the business education for women. So we hope to see you at both, and thank you very much, and I hope you grab some lunch somehow. Thank you very much to our panelists.